Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today we're going to do something a little different. I actually pulled this from YouTube. The Near Mint group of comic book reviewers, you can find them at nearmintnews.com. They also have a YouTube channel, and then on Twitter, they're at Near Mint Weekly. They do a weekly YouTube show where they review comics, a lot of stuff that's not necessarily big too, although recently they did review the Superman Up in the Sky series, and I think the week before that they did the Batman Universe. So they do a few big two books once in a while, but a lot of independent stuff as well. They also have a couple members who work the con scene. So they know that. They know a lot of creators. They know the convention scene very well. And in fact, in this recent episode where they were reviewing Superman Up in the Sky, one of the contributors was talking about kind of how crazy it gets with people wanting certain exclusives and such. And so I went back and forth trying to decide if I was going to edit that part out or not. But I ended up deciding to leave it in just because it's fun and it's, you know, it's interesting to hear about these creators and crazy things that go down at shows, especially for those listeners that don't get to go. So one of the things that I really like about the Near Mint crew, the reason I decided that I wanted to put this up for Superman Sunday, is that they really take a kind of new reader-friendly, somebody who's new to comics, they take that sort of tack. You know, a lot of times I kind of forget that everybody hasn't been reading comics for 40 years. And, you know, sometimes when I'm breaking things down or I'm coming at it from a different perspective, coming at it from a perspective of somebody who's been reading comics for a really long time and has kind of been around the block in terms of, you know, seeing story and being familiar with the universes that these characters live in. Whereas these three, again, they come at it with a much fresher eye. So I thought it'd be worthwhile to put their thoughts on Superman Up in the Sky onto Superman Sunday. Again, you can follow them on Twitter at Near Mint Weekly. Their website is at nearmintnews.com or nearmintnews.com rather, no at. But you can go, you can sign up for a newsletter. It comes right to your inbox and it just talks about basically news in the comic industry. So it's definitely worthwhile. I also think going to YouTube and watching their book clubs weekly is also a lot of fun. So hopefully I'm going to appear on there in the future. What they usually do is they have a guest come on and the guest gets to choose what book everybody reads and then they talk about it. So hopefully, like I said, I'm going to be on there next month. Not sure what title. I have three I'm trying to choose from right now. Not sure which is going to be the best. I think I have it narrowed down, but there's a couple others that I'm considering as well. So we'll see. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the episode. As always, definitely go and give Near Mint a follow on Twitter. Take a look at their YouTube channel. There's a lot of great content there. And if you don't have time for either of those, again, if you subscribe to their weekly newsletter, it comes right to your inbox. So really easy. You don't even have to go searching. So again, hope you all enjoy what they have to say about Superman Up in the Sky, and we'll talk to you next time.
Hello, everyone out there. How y'all doing tonight? If you're watching this now, say hi in the chat. Great to see you. If you're watching this later, try to type in the chat. I have no idea if it works, but it's worth a try. You guys can talk amongst yourself forever and ever and ever until the end of time in the chat of this video. Hope you're all doing well. This is the Near Mint Book Club. I'm Tommy. This is Alana. That's Mandy. I pulled that off well. Today we're reading. I'm pulled up. Superman Up in the Sky by Tom King and Andy Kubert.
Yay! Kubert. Roxy. Hi. Hi, Chris. Hi, what Kelly. Oh,
hey. A quick synopsis of this book. What's that up in the sky? It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's a short miniseries that was released primarily through Walmart and then eventually in actual comic book shops. What is it about? Superman talks about being Superman quite a bit. He also goes to save a girl from an alien. Does he save her? We'll talk about that later. Mandy, first thoughts.
Okay. Is something echoing? Okay. I'm not usually a big Superman fan. I find that he can be a little bit overrated. I don't even know why I don't like him. I can't quite pinpoint it. But anyways, let's just say Tom King is probably the best writer to get me to want to read a Superman book. And I think it's because he writes it's a lot more like emotional feeling, and I don't know. So it grabs me in that sense. And then of course you add that he's saving a kid. So I quite enjoyed it. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I can get into it, but I'll let you guys say what you want to say.
Alana, go.
I always want to say things. I mean, yeah, everyone or most people know that I don't normally like big two type superhero books. As a kid, I always was like, Superman's my favorite because he's the best one because he can't be beated. I probably said beated. probably, I still do. So, no, and then as you get older, you're like, well, that's dumb. Like, everyone needs to have a weakness and it can't just be a rock. But then, like, now I've, like, almost flipped all the way back and been, you know what? Like, why not just have, like, a superhero that is super, like, just period. I think that I liked this better than any of the Batmans we've read. I mean, like, because I feel like, yeah, like, Batman and Superman and all these characters just kind of keep being rewritten, but you can only change so much. So every time we read a Batman, I'm like, haven't we seen this before? And I felt the same with this, but I actually cared about it more. I don't know. So maybe I just liked Superman better, or maybe it was Tom King's writing or the art or the format. I really enjoyed the format more so than last week when we read the Batman, what was it? Universe?
Batman Universe, yeah.
Which was a similar thing where it was Walmart books and they were like really short, like 10-page miniseries, which is uncommon for comic books. This, I felt like they did it better. That's that same format, but they did it in a way that made more sense to me. It was clearer to me. And yeah, and I mean, it was very much a Tom King story, and I'm very much a Tom King fan. So I think if you don't like how Tom King writes, you wouldn't like this. But I did. So yeah, I would say overall I liked it. Yeah.
I'm impressed.
I know.
Tom, I feel like, yeah. Hi. No, I like this a lot. It was, I read quite a bit of it when it first came out a few weeks ago, like, you know, not in a Walmart. Nothing against Walmart. I just didn't know they had comics there, even though I like comics. Like back in college, that would have been great to go run and pick up some comics when I was at Walmart getting like junk food and stuff. But if I was to speak about this before we had our book club with Mitch last week, where he explained like how this was all released in Walmart and how it's like, I didn't even notice the fact that it was only like 10-page segments. I wasn't really thinking about it. But now knowing that, it makes a lot more sense. And not even just in like the fact that obviously there's parts that are short, but just in how random and different each part is. And it makes a lot more sense because you're not catering to the people who are going to like put it on their pull list and get it every week. You're kind of catering to the people who are in the toy section of Walmart. So you have to kind of just make it like, here's a thing. Here's some background information, but also like dive into it. I think this was just as random and all over the place as Batman Universe. They both had their strengths. Batman Universe kind of used it more or less to make it feel like more like a zany TV show, where this felt more like it was like 8 different homages to Superman as a character by putting him in like different situations. Both of them feeling like basically TV shows, but kind of different, two different. Well, one was like Rick and Morty. This one was more like, almost like Doctor Who, I guess, in a sense. But I like that. I like that when you turn the page after one part ends, you're like, I have no idea what's going to be coming up next. No, it's like, oh, he's in World War II. Of course he is. Why wouldn't he be? You know, who cares? But it's good. It all works. Like, everything was thought out ahead of time. And it's not just like Superman's here, et cetera. Like, figure it out. Everything seems purposeful. Like, he had a point to illustrate in every single thing. And I liked it. And also, I probably went in this more excited than you guys did. I don't read too much Superman, but I think he's fine. I definitely don't have any complaints about him. All Four Superman's good. Four Season Superman's good. Superman 64 is pretty good.
Shut up.
Superman knowledge. But I enjoy this. Yeah, there wasn't a single like part that I felt like was a weak part, which is all you can really ask for when they're 10-page segments.
So I felt like this one flowed a little bit better than Batman Universe. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it still had, each issue was very different and had its own story that it was telling and could stand alone. But what they, I don't know, I feel like what he did here with that, the one constant story of the child that he's saving carried through, I think, better than the one constant story that Batman Universe had. And I enjoyed that story still. But I felt that throughout this whole, like, even the parts where I can't remember which issue it was, but it was the one where the little girl, it was the one with the race with the Flash.
Yeah.
And I, right away, you could tell it was a child that was telling the story. And I don't know why it didn't cross my mind that it could be that little girl telling the story. Mm-hmm. But I was like, just the way that he was writing it, instantly it was like, this is a kid's, like, this is how kids talk, right? The, like, kind of run on sentences and stuff like that. But just like how he kind of fit in that one story into every little piece of this story, I think really made it a lot more, I can't even think the right word, more cohesive, I guess, in the end.
Yeah.
But also with Batman, and I think after we read it, even all of us were kind of like, well, this feels like it was written for kids, and like they might enjoy it. And so with Superman, I actually read it to Jackson, my 7-year-old, and I think, I don't know if he quite enjoyed it as much as he may have enjoyed the Batman one, but he sat through all of it and listened to it all. But I mean, there's some parts I was like, man, this is a little deeper than he might understand, but
yeah, it was a 12 plus rating, so it's kind of weird. I'll go ahead here and say, if you haven't read the book and you'd be interested in reading it, we do not promise that we will be spoiler free. So head away and come back later if you need to. But no, I agree with kind of everything you're saying. What bothered me about kind of Batman last week is that, like, I don't care that much about this character, or at least not in this story. That's the thing. If it's a good Batman story, for sure, like, let's read that. But I didn't feel like it was like that last week. And not that, I think I even said there's something wrong with it. It just wasn't like, it didn't like nail it. Like, there's a reason it's not perfect, right? There was, it didn't hit those bits. Whereas this one, I agree. Like, even though it actually, like, each story, each little 10-page whatever was completely different. There was no transition between, so it felt very like, yeah, like almost episodic Doctor Who. Like, there's no, it's like a jump cut from this, what just happened here in like World War II, into now he's in space. Or like, you know, and you had a lot of the time, and this is just Tom King's writing too, is where it's like the first two pages you just kind of read, and then all of a sudden you're able to kind of mentally catch up. And that's how he chooses to write, and that's great. But even like with that style of like jumping around, no transitions, kind of slowly leading you, not just like doing straight exposition, even all of those things, this story definitely felt way more connected than the last one. And I almost think it's because it was just like a simpler thing. So it was just, there is a girl that needs to be saved, and they say it throughout, like, she's not special, she's no one, she has no one, she was literally taken because she was no one. Why would Superman you know, he almost dies a few times, you know, like all these things. Like, why would he go through all of that? Why would he leave his love and his planet and his whatever for this one person? And I mean, that is really just like a one sentence pitch of what the book is. It's like, because he's Superman, you know, like because he's not gonna give up on even one person that means nothing, right? And so I think that is a, because it's more emotionally driven, was mm-hmm. just a much better anchor for all these random stories. Whereas in the last one, which spoilers for Batman Universe, but like having a White Lantern ring in a Fabergé egg that was stole, like that was just like a little bit too much. And then, yeah, the plots didn't mesh as well to me. To me, this one was like good bones that made up a skeleton. The last one was like good bones, but no skeleton kind of thing.
Spooky. Now, what if that girl turned out to be a White Lantern ring?
A what?
So what if the little girl turned out to be a White Lantern ring? Would that have been the perfect story?
It like comes out of her chest? No.
Okay, no. Just checking. It's like, which MacGuffin do you like more, you know? The girl or the egg? Which MacGuffin came first, the girl or the egg? Oh, right. We have comments to read.
Yeah, I saw those too. Cool.
We missed a few. Okay, everyone is reacting to the mention of Superman 64. It does elicit a physical reaction when mentioned. Understandable. Kelly said, I'm not a Superman fan, but I like this because it made me feel emotions. Yeah. It's one of those books that there should be a name for it if there isn't, where the whole point of the book is to like have the character or other characters just be like dramatically say like, you're Superman or I'm Superman as much as possible. It's very common, I feel like, in comic books where they're like celebrating the character. So they have like all those dramatic scenes of just like them saying their own name. Just a lot of like, I think Batman does it in every issue at this point now.
But at least when someone says I'm Superman or like they're talking about Superman, to me, at least that is, and if you think about why he was created and what he's continued to be, and it's the reason he's overrated, but it's because he is this idea of hope. He is this idea of like, even in your worst times, there is this thing that exists that is invincible. And so your hope is never lost. Whereas when Batman goes on Batman, it just is like, cool, it's a rich guy that needs to go to therapy. Like, that's how I see it. So again, there's like good Batman series, but yeah, this Superman saying and people being like, well, it's Superman. They're not like, you can say, oh yeah, they're just fan service saying his name, but they're also saying like, he is literally like this representation of hope. I don't know.
But both Superman was saying, I'm Superman. And then other characters were saying, you're Superman. And it was almost like a, when they were saying it was like a reminder to him to kind of like pick himself up. And then when he's saying it was like, yeah, that, you know what I mean? Like, I can do this or whatever. So I think it, like you said, with the Batman thing, it doesn't always, him saying his name or who he was doesn't quite have that same backbone to it that I think what they were getting at with the like, I'm Superman or you're Superman kind of thing is like, well, no, you are basically invincible minus The Rock. But
Dwayne but, Rock Johnson.
Sorry. Oh, if only.
And I think Tom knew this going into it. Like, he's too smart to not acknowledge it. But I think the whatever the part was where it was like the something death's the lowest lane or some number, but the one where Lois keeps dying in his imagination. That's a moment where Superman like doesn't have his superiness, even though he's not being like defeated or anything. He's being defeated by the DMV. And at that point, it's like the only time in it where they're saying like, who, like, what's your name? And instead of being like a dramatic like pose, like I'm Superman, he says Superman, and then they ask him to like spell it and stuff, and he's just completely losing his ability to like use his name as some kind of crazy symbol of power.
Yeah.
And I like that. So like Tom knows. He knows what he's doing. He knows
that 100%.
Cliche almost, but he's using it well.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that is it. This book did hit the points of leaning into it enough and not. It's like the last one with, again, sorry, Batman Universe, but my critique was like, it felt like fan service to a writer that like wanted all these things to happen as a kid. It's like, oh, dinosaurs and oh, Old West. Like, we literally had the same thing. We literally had a dinosaur. We literally had, World War II, you know, like we had these same kind of fan service, but it's like just that. How it was written. And maybe it's the character or the story or Tom King, but it definitely no longer felt like fan service or like writing yourself into a story. It actually made some sense. There's a comment from Chris saying, I love this story, but I'm also a massive Tom King fan and most likely biased, same, but he thinks this works better than Batman Universe. It worked a lot better for me by having an overarching story, but each issue is told in a different way while exploring a different part of the character. Yeah, I think that that's super valid. It's like a lesson. Each one is, so like even the DMV one is almost like a lesson in being humble and like patience, and that you're not like, even though he might be invincible, like he is fragile. Like all he just misses his girl, you know? So I definitely think that that's really true. Kelly added on that she did also like this one more than Batman Universe. So I'm on their team with that one.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, we're all kind of biased to Tom King, but
yeah.
I think, though, it speaks volumes that it's a character, at least for Alana and I, are not the biggest fan of. I mean, you even just superheroes in general, and the fact that you came out of it. And
superiest superhero.
Exactly.
I liked this.
Yeah. So I was like, that's skill. I mean, I think that's, I'd be interested to hear from someone who's like a giant Superman fan, how they felt, right? But it is like, I mean, this crosses all the things off that I enjoy about Tom King's writing, like that emotion. You know, I'm a softie. So anytime that I feel the feels, that I'm gonna probably enjoy it a little bit more. So I don't know. I mean, if anyone in chat is a super Superman fan, let us know your thoughts.
I mean, I think that Superman in general, how they've had if they didn't change these things from when Action Comics 1 came out, he would not exist. It's just not possible. So what they've done is that they have, yes, he's physically, practically unbreakable. You know, he's indestructible. He cannot be defeated. But mentally, not that he's broken. He's not like Batman where he's like a broken person. Like, if anything, he's like one of the most grounded, you know, healthy brains out there. But it's like, even people that strong have weaknesses, and even their weaknesses might be considered strengths. So like, he would lose in a fight to Batman because Batman needs it more. And it's like, well, you lost, but like, you did, you know. And there's a bunch of bits throughout this that it's like him showing that even those weaknesses can then be kind of flipped to be strengths, or that they're gonna happen and that's okay. And I kind of like that better than the whole like, I'm Batman and I'm sad about my parents and like, I'm gonna do these things and people are just gonna deal with it. Alfred's just like fine with it. It's like, no, like he needs some psychological help. But maybe I'm just anti-Batman. Who the fuck knows?
Wow.
I know.
Did anyone else think that most of the issues were him in that? I don't know. I wish I knew more about like DC cosmic lore, but the stuff whenever Tom was alluding to him writing Strange Adventures one day when he did that one part when he's on the planet, when he's in that machine, and he's getting the Zeta rays going at him. Did anyone else think that the whole middle chunk of the comic was him still in that machine, or was it just me?
I knew the next section was.
Yeah.
And then him coming out of it, and then the guy's like, you made it. That's like statistically impossible. And he's like, yeah, it should be, but it wasn't today. And he just is like,
I think the one right after that was the boxing match. And that was just that came out of completely out of left field. Right. So when they kept saying like, oh, it's statistically impossible for you to survive this, like without going insane. I thought like him getting up out of the chair, like wasn't real. And then the boxing match wasn't real. And it was all just like him fighting the Zeta thing. And then that wasn't the case, but that's what I thought for like a really long time.
You could make that conspiracy argument, right?
I could see that.
Aren't there movies like that, that people are like, they've been dead the whole time, and like everything, like Inception, the whole thing was this, or, you know, this was, everything is this, or you're still in the Matrix. Like, I think that that's, if you went to Tom and you said, is it possible? He'd probably be like, it's up to you how you interpret it. Cause I think that that's 100% valid. You know, even
at the end of it, I didn't think that at all. Like it was clear that wasn't, but like for like a decent chunk of this, when like he was boxing, traveling through time to like World War II, I was like, I'm still in that machine right now. Like, why else would he be doing all the weird things?
Because it was a Walmart special.
Walmart special. If you didn't accidentally spill your cherry Coke on it, you could read it. It's Walmart. And it's Walmart. Any good comments? Chris, as far as individual issues go, what are your favorites? 1,000 Deaths of Lois Lane is Chris's favorite. He also likes the boxing issue. I love the one where he separated Superman and Clark Kent. That one was really cool.
I think I liked the race. I think
Flash. I think I'm a softie. I'm not a huge Flash fan either. Like, not that I dislike him, but I've never picked. I read Tom King's like Batman Flash button thing, but I don't really read a lot of Flash comics. I guess I watched the TV show, but I think I'm a softie. So, and I, like I said, I think he did an exceptional job writing as a child. Right. And I there was just like so much emotion still in there. Like little kind of hints. It kind of told her story too a little bit on the side without it being really like her telling her story, but like just the little kind of hints at her being like, well, you know, and then my brother died, or I think it was her brother, wasn't it, or something, and then like, you know, being put into a home and her family life not being great, but it didn't feel like it was like a, you know, this is my origin story or anything like that, this is, you know, why I was where I was at, nothing like that. But I don't know. I think that was my favorite.
No, that was my favorite for sure. I did like the World War II one too. So this is a thing Mandy and I have talked about. I don't know if we've talked about this online, but I have a really big issue, and it's more so for female characters, but it's because it's something that happens with most female characters. But I think maybe this is like, I'm just thinking about it out loud here. But I think this is maybe why I don't like Batman, is because I don't love the trope of, in order to be strong, you must start out broken. And what I have with female characters is they normally use sexual assault to show that this person is a victim, or is a, you know, is at this lowest possible level because they've just been, excuse my language, but raped. You know, and then they become strong and everybody's like, oh, you know, Sansa's so strong now. And it's like, well, it could have been just as dramatic and
trauma
without needing to cause every other female character to have a sexual assault. And like, that seems like a high statistic, and I am just making that up, but I challenge you to like, next time you're reading, especially things kind of 2010 to 1990, like it's gotten better now. It still happens, but take a look. Everybody has either, every female character, no matter how strong she is, has had that situation, whether it came or not. So I think my issue is like, you don't have to be broken to be strong. And I think that that is something I've never enjoyed in a character. I don't like weak characters. I don't care how much you grow by the end. I want you to be a person and be a likable person and maybe have flaws or things you can improve on. Cause I think that's just more realistic to everyone. So I think my thing with Batman is that he always is broken, right? He always is hurting or whining or sad or brooding. Whereas this book, like there's no point in this book that Superman is broken, like, especially emotionally. So, you know, the fight and the race and all these things are him becoming stronger, not because he was weak, but because he was strong and he needed to be stronger. And he used positive emotions as a drive. And I think that that is, for me, the kind of story that in, you know, a couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of years, I'm going to remember that a lot more than some broken person grew because they were the underdog. You know, those stories to me, unless they're like sports stories, like I love me a sports, like Rudy's the best, but you know, I don't really care for those characters very much. So maybe I think that that's also why I liked, yeah. So with the race, it's like, he literally did something that he shouldn't have been able to do because he needed to do it. I don't know. That to me is more inspiring than whatever. Kelly likes the race one too, because Alice made me really like this comic. I love when she asked Superman all the questions. I did love that issue too.
That last one, yeah. That was very sweet. Yeah.
Especially it is the kind of questions that it's like, you know, like who would win in a fight? And, you know, what did she say? Like, do you fart? And you
know, yeah.
Like, is that how you fly?
Again, just like classic kid questions. Like, yeah.
I really liked to, I mean, not that Superman is humanity, but he kind of represents humanity. That's what his character is meant to be, the positives of humanity. And one of the books that I always really loved since I read it was The Martian. And not that this is the same at all, but in The Martian, if you guys don't know, haven't read or seen it, it's Matt Damon in the movie, but like this guy with their expedition to Mars, they're starting to set up civilization through like, we're gonna stay for a bit, we're gonna set a colony and then we're leaving and eventually someone will come and colonize it kind of thing. And so they all go and they're all out, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere there's like a sandstorm and they think that the one guy has died and they leave him behind and it turns out he's alive. But like the people on the ship don't have enough fuel to go get him and get back. But it's like the story of the entire human race putting together its assets and like millions of dollars and like putting people's lives on the line and like all these things for one guy that like might not even, like, he's not, I mean, he's special because he's an astronaut on Mars, but like, again, he's not anyone particularly noteworthy. But it's just humanity realizing, like, if we can do something and we don't, like, that's worse than trying. So this kind of, as I was reading it, gave me those vibes that Superman, it's like that fight of humanity, like every life is important, not because they're important, but because they're alive.
Yeah. I would have been shocked if Alice being not important would have affected anything at all. I thought that was almost an unnecessary thing to even include, that she was unimportant, just because I wouldn't imagine Superman being like, oh, she's not important. Oh, never mind, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to go home, I guess. Lois is probably bored. I'm going to go home. This girl's not important. I'm out of here. And I understand why that was included in it, but I don't, I think Superman would have saved her no matter what.
I think it makes for a different story though if it's like the president's daughter or something, because then you're like, well, then not just Superman is the one that's out trying to find this kid or something, right? So I think having it just be, yeah, a kid where they're like, well, no, like, not that people were saying this, but you know, like if the police are kind of like, well, nobody's gonna miss her or something, you know what I mean, like it's not that that necessarily would mean that other people would not care about her, but I think it adds to that Superman's like, well, no, she does matter just as much as anyone else, because like you said, Superman's in it no matter what, but I think it adds that factor of like maybe what the world is thinking of this this story.
It's also, it's like the trolley car problem, right? If Superman is not on Earth or actively trying to save the known reality, the known galaxy, which even the alien that like heals him pretty early on, like when he shares memory, he realizes like not only has he saved our universe and other universes, but he'll be needed to do it again. So I will willingly sacrifice my life for that. Like someone makes that choice. And like, but the question is, and I mean, he even says it in a few other instances, not relating just to Alice, but the idea of like, if I'm here, billions will die. But if I'm not here, billions will die. Like, what is the right thing? So it's, I think it becomes one of those things, him leaving for, we don't know how long, to go save this little girl that is not important. How many people died on Earth? You know, how many people did he choose to kind of leave? Not that he could anticipate anyone needing help. It's not his, I mean, it is his job, but like, it's not his job. Like he didn't ask for these powers. So it's, I'm sure that he, the whole time he's feeling guilt and he's trying to justify it. And one of the things is like, well, is this child? So like with the trolley car problem, if you guys don't know, it's like a psychological, test of, so if there's a single track that then splits into two. And there's a switch, so you can switch which way the train goes. There's a train. There's no way to stop it. There's just no way. But you can decide which track it goes on. The track that it's currently set to go on, there's three people on the track, and they will die. There's no way to move them. There is no way to make them not die. And then if you were to hit the switch and turn the other way, the train would go onto this other track, which has one person on the track. And they will die. There's no way to stop them. But what do you do? Like either way, you're going to lose a life. And it's the idea of like, is inaction better than action? Because statistically you would think switch the track, three lives are better than one life. You know, like if I can save three people versus losing three people, that should be better. But then, yeah, it's like if it's three 85-year-olds, and one young, healthy child, you know, where, like, at what point, you know, if it's three criminals, serial killers, whatever, and one neurosurgeon, or the person that has the cure to cancer, you know, like at what point does a certain life have more value than the other? So I think that Tom's point by just kind of continuously being like, she's not important, is that it was, you're meant to think like this is just one life and she has no effect and he has made this choice and the story is him justifying it to himself, justifying it to others. And I think throughout the story, he just compels people with his belief, right? I mean, again, someone sacrifices themselves. He changes his entire values at one point. Like he is supposed to murder an innocent and then we don't know what happens. And then he said, I did it. And Darkseid is like, did you really? I think you're lying. And Superman's like, I either did it and, you know, broke my moral code to do it, or I'm lying to you now and I broke my moral code to lie to you. Either way, you get what you want, which was me to break my moral code. So what does it matter? And I mean, and that's enough for Darkseid. He's like, cool. Like, you literally, he went to the edge of his own self. I mean, that's Batman killing the Joker, you know, that's Batman, right? We've had conversations about that before. And Superman chose to do that, and not for Lois Lane, not for the person that has the cure for cancer, but for a little orphan girl who believes in him.
It's wild that Superman can get out of a lie by saying, I probably don't lie either. Yeah. So who cares if I'm lying or not? I probably don't lie. So just my lies are just as bad as me murdering someone. I'm going to go
either
now.
Either my first innocent kill or my first lie. Like they're pretty much the same, right?
It's all the same. It's the same in the end. If you kill someone and then tell the truth, they're like, at least you didn't lie. I'm really proud of you.
Get that's, on what they say. That's what they say when you're in court. When you plead guilty, they go, well, you're free then.
We love an honorable man. Let's get you out of here.
Here's $10 for the cab ride home.
Exactly. Sorry to disturb you today.
Chris said that he would love a near the article about comics slash graphic novels featuring female leads that don't fall into the trope that I was talking about. Chris, that is definitely something that I've talked about, I'm writing about a lot more of those like feminist issues and like my opinions and my beliefs. But then I keep getting stuck on it. So I'm not going to make a promise, but I'm not going to say, I don't know.
I mean, I have one favorite, but we all know who she is. So
yeah.
But
I could argue the same kind of point, even though it's not sexual assault, right? With Jane Foster.
But it's not her coming, like, she's just always who she was. The cancer doesn't make her Thor or make her, you know what I mean? Like, her weakness is not what makes her stronger.
Yeah.
It's actually what makes her weaker.
It's her giving up that strength to go weak again and die again or get closer to death. Yeah, it's a whole. But depends on how much you're looking into all this. For an article, I don't know. I would have to either focus on like one or two or have to look very surface level because obviously I haven't read.
I think the most common thing with what you're talking about there, and we're going to go off on a tangent, of course, is superheroes' girlfriends is where a lot of times they have to die or have to have trauma, you know, so the hero can then be, so the hero can be the hero and save the day. And or avenge his girlfriend or wife or whomever, right? And so I think a lot of people point, like, some of the older Spider-Man comics with like Gwen Stacy and stuff, like her death didn't need to happen the way that it did. It's like, I think
why I hate MJ too is like he dates MJ, he's like, you're not a nice person, you were made for a sex symbol, you're selfish and you're rude, all these things, and they break up, and then he meets Gwen Stacy, the love of his freaking life, and then they kill her, and then he's like, oh, but MJ's grown now. And it's like, no, you're in grief and you have experienced trauma, go date Felicia, at least she's equally messed up and not going to take advantage of you. Fuck you, MJ.
I think that's where, like I said, I think the trope for me that annoys me is when they're used as a plot device for someone else. I think what could be argued is, like I said, like finding a character that maybe has weaknesses. And I think I talked about it in my like article about mental health, but it can almost be like eye-opening or positive for someone that is as well struggling to see someone that is so strong or something, like they're heroes, being weak. I think, like you said, as long as it's not necessarily used as the trope of who they are or something like that, where so I can see your argument on Batman, but I think they've used it well with characters like Captain Marvel or even Daredevil and stuff like that. It's like maybe what they went through doesn't necessarily make them any less or more of a hero. I'm so sorry, Jackson and F. He's knocking at the door. I'm sorry.
Underused female characters.
Yeah.
No, I think you're totally right. I think the big thing is, and it's with everything, and I think people are finally starting to get it, is the idea of like, you as a human being are not one thing. So like, yeah, I'm a woman, or yeah, I enjoy this, and yeah, I'm these, but like, that each one of those things is not a personality. You know, it's, I saw this on dating apps when I was dating like people that were, they were like, I like yoga and beer. And I'm like, so does everyone else on this platform. Like that's great. I love whatever too. I love The Office. I love, you know, those are great. Those are great elements to what makes you a person, but they're not your person. And I think it's the same in comics, like being a female character. Yeah. You can definitely explore how that's different, and you can talk about experiences that real people would experience, like real women would experience, or superheroes would experience, that is different than male superheroes. Totally, you can talk about those things. It becomes really iffy when you create a whole story around that, and that's where like the pandering kind of, and we did see it for like a little bit with like LGBT or certain races, less so in comics, but like in TV shows and like random media, they would like make a movie that had all these female leads or people of color or whatever. And then it would flop. And people were like, well, because we don't want to see female leads. And it's like, no, because you made a whole movie around being a girl. Well, guess what? 50% of the world is a girl. Like, why? That's not interesting. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think with a lot of these things, so if it's mental health, if it's abuse, if it's loss, grief, PTSD, one or two individual stories exploring that completely is totally fine. But otherwise, it's like, you are not your trauma. You are not your gender. You are not the thing you love. Like, all of these things make up who you are, but it's like the choices make up who you are, right? So you choosing to do these things. So that's where, when I see media, specifically towards women, that is like things happening to them versus them interacting with their world. That's where I get frustrated. Like a passive protagonist, I guess. If the character is stumbling across things, if things are happening, if people are finding them, they tend to be a weaker character, and they don't tend to do that to men. They only tend to do that to women. And even characters that I really enjoy. So like Rey in Star Wars, she's a pretty passive protagonist, especially in the first one. Star Wars, I don't know if I said that, but like Rey in, you know, she's kind of there, and she kind of finds a droid, and then she kind of is running, and then she runs into Finn. Like, she, it's not really her choices that lead her to the final thing. And again, if you really look at it, if you examine your favorite male led things, you'll find that happens less with men. So that's the thing that I would like to write about, but it's just like such a complicated thing. Tangent.
Yeah.
Mom life. Kelly just said mom life, and Chris said the mom and Mandy just came out.
She comes out at conventions too. So watch out. Don't fight in my line. But
always wanted to see that happen.
Oh man, Mandy at conventions. Mandy will work with like Tom King, David Finch, a few. We both worked with the Q-Berts. I always get them confused. I think I worked with Andy. Did you
remember? Mandy.
Yeah, but basically these big creators at comic book conventions, you can imagine, if you're a fan, how crazy some of these lines get, especially when they are like current creators or good at social media or like whatever the things are. And so, yeah, Mandy managing one of those people's lines is like, it's good, but it's a little scary. I mean, I'd say the same. I got people kicked out because they were trying to rush Bruce Timm's table. And I was like, that's not happening. And I'm like 5 feet tall, and I'm like screaming at 9 foot tall, dressed in their army clothing, army men. And I'm like, what gives you the fucking right to push on this table when all those people are in line politely, like, get the fuck out of here. And they're like, what? And I'm like, I don't, human decency, man. Anyways.
Mm-hmm. Tall army men there.
There was one guy, he wasn't in uniform, but, and this is with Jay Scott, and this was at MegaCon, and it was Jay Scott's first convention exclusive, so you couldn't buy it online, you couldn't buy it anywhere else. It was Jean Grey White Phoenix cover, D cover, and it was the first show we had it at, and I think we had like 50 of them, so we only had like 10 per day, and I mean, it was a riot. Like, I've never seen anything like that before. And I'm pretty good with faces, especially when I'm organizing this same line over and over for like an hour or two, because we were waiting till a certain time to do this. And all of a sudden, like, our line opens up and the first guy that walks up, I'm like, who the fuck are you? Like, you weren't the first in my line. Like, why is the first person in my line like 10 people back and not going to get an issue today? So I'm confronting this guy. I'm saying, no. I've been standing here the whole time. Like, you can't lie to me because I've been standing here.
Yeah. So,
like, none of your lies are going to work because I'm here and I haven't left. And yeah, he starts saying, well, I have 2 days home from the army and this is the only thing I want and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, that's amazing. And that's great. And like, I support your choices. But also these people all waited in the same line. Like, you don't know their story. Like, I don't, it doesn't give you any right in my perspective. If we had a different program for veterans or serving military, great, but we don't. It's like, why do you get to budge people that have been in line for like 5 hours? Like, I just was like, I don't care, to the point. And then, I mean, he's being like, ma'am, 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 because it's Florida. He's like, ma'am. And I'm like, ma'am me. Like, what are you trying to say to me? Like, you don't, I don't think you inherently deserve this more than anyone else. And then finally, the guy that I was working with was like, I'm just going to give him one so that he shuts up. And I was like, don't reward this.
The worst. That's the worst.
That's the American way. We do.
He's like a sweet soul. And then he like sold him one. I think like an extra, like we opened it up more or something. And I just was like, I will always remember that guy. If I ever see him again, I'm going to be like, sir, I half salute you for your service, but I dis salute you for your service to me. Yeah, sir. He's like, I've got 2 days here and this is the only thing I want. Cool. I've got 2 days here too. And I'm just trying to be fair.
I love people that are just like that in general at San Diego. You're like, hey, we're all just here for this many days and want everything. And, you know.
So you're not staying for the week-long con that's going on? That's so crazy.
Yeah.
3 months. The con never ends. So
people that negotiate, too, with, like, big deal artists. Like, the people that have hour-long lines or, like, raffles to get into their line. And then they come up you to buy, purchase a product, and they're like, well, how about if I buy three, how about 50 instead of 60? And I've just learned to straight up say to them, like, why would I sell you something for a discount that's going to get sold out at full price? Like, if you want it, you can buy it. But if you don't want it, by the time you come back tomorrow and get through this line again, it's going to be gone. Like, I just don't understand. This is like a full tangent. Chris says I'm here for the ShowCon stories. Yeah. I mean, it's like a whole world. I mean, it's retail, but it's retail. It's like Black Friday retail every weekend, because to these people, like to us,
yeah,
sure, I'm in Phoenix this weekend and next week I'm in Connecticut and the next week I'm in Toronto. Like, this is just another show. To them, though, this is the only thing they get for a whole year. This is the only time they meet these people. So, like, sometimes I get frustrated irrationally. Or not irrationally, but, you know, you get the same question over and over. You get the same whatever or the same frustration. And I'm like, you're stupid. But really, it's like, no,
I think there's a balance.
Never experience this. Yeah. And there's people that when you sit there and you say, hey, here's my side, they go, oh, my God, duh. Like, so sorry. Let me get back to mine.
There's a difference of someone being, like, respectful and kind to us who are working at the booth and asking for something, and if they're understanding about what we can and can't do or say or whatever. But then there, you do get a handful of people where they just don't care, kind of. It can be a little bit belittling, and that's where you're just like, why would I give you this now?
Well, and I think that's really funny, because trade shows are a little bit different than any other retail. And I mean, it's a bit different, like for Mandy. And then when I was working for J. Scott and when I was working for CSA, but I still have creator clients, friends that I help represent at shows and just help set up and whatever. And I work as their like retail person. And it's like, this person is my boss. Sure, they're paying me. But again, they're going to make their money. Like, your $50 sale is not like hit or miss. So they don't care if I don't sell to you. So again, going to back to the Bruce Timm thing, I just started using that. People wanted the commissions and were not obeying my rules. And I just started shouting at them, being like, I see you. I know what you look like. And I'm the one that sells you it and takes your money. Do you think I'm going to take your money if you don't listen to me? No. And I got to refuse like two or three dudes. I was like, no.
I mean, like, weren't they knocking the table over, basically?
Like, yeah, there was one show where, because what Bruce Timm does, if you don't know, he only goes to San Diego Comic-Con or events basically contractually obligated to go to by Warner Brothers, because he's never actually been like a comic dude, right? Like, he really came into animation and then just happened to come across Batman and all that. So he's not a comic dude. He doesn't really go to cons anymore. He doesn't really like cons anymore. people think he doesn't like his fans. He likes his fans. He just is a really awkward dude. And so the one way that he kind of balances that he, yeah, sure, he wants to meet a couple fans and like be able to provide commissions and whatever, is that he will sit with Joyce Chin at San Diego Comic-Con. Because Joyce is very good at handling those awkward moments or like pulling conversation when someone is spending too much time talking to him. And Bruce is the kind of guy that if you ask him anything that's a yes or no question, he will give you a yes or no. You know, he's not going to expand. And he'll sit there and he'll blink at you until you find it awkward and walk away. You know, he has no sense of, yeah, so this was a really cool story. No, that's not going to happen. And so, yeah, the only show he goes to is San Diego Comic-Con. And the only way he does commissions is he does pre-done headshots, which he puts out on the table every day. And so one year he went to put the book down with all these pre-done headshots. And there was enough people kind of like lingering around looking that maybe 40 people, like the whole aisle was full. And they're all just trying to see on the table the book that's sitting there. They're not doing anything malicious, but there's so many people pushing that the whole table tips over. And me and Bruce are standing on the other side, so we're able to catch it. So it doesn't like hit the ground, but we catch it. And he starts losing it. So he rips the thing, like he's ripping commissions out of people's hands. He puts them all in the book and he puts the book down and he goes, we're done. I'm not selling any more of these at all. And like loses his mind. And everybody's like blinking. And I was like, you heard the man, leave. he ended up selling them kind of like secretly later that day. And then the next day it was like, one person can be at this table at a time. No one can wait in the aisle. You must either walk up and down the aisle or go stand in the open space. And so that's where I got to yell at people who were like not walking down up and down the aisle, like who were like hovering, looking at a booth across the way. And I was like, no, I know what you're doing. Leave. And they're like, oh, well, no. I'm like, well, then make a purchase because you've been standing there for 40 minutes, you know? Anyways, worked out.
I know.
Do a raffle now. It's much better.
How'd you guys feel about the Superman story you read?
I was like, should we do recommendations if we liked this?
Oh, yeah. I just talked for 20 minutes straight. Cool.
If you like this, what con story would you recommend?
the one where I felt hope and joy and I made it out alive.
All of them.
Not New York.
Not New York. The small town.
I love New York. I love New York City. I love the convention, but God, that show is like hell.
Because
you're just—it's the longest show hours, and oh, I mean, Tommy, you were there.
Luckily, we have a secret bathroom now, and
we have a secret bathroom
works because years, neither of those things have been true. So,
yes, books I would recommend. I mean, I feel like we do this, I feel like we've recommended this a bajillion times, but I think if you like this, you would like Vision by Tom King.
Anything
Tom King, but I think the way that superhero is written is very similar to the way this one is.
I also think Mr. Miracle. But
yeah. We always want to talk about Mr. Miracle. One day we'll have a book club about Mr. Miracle.
We're covering all the Tom Kings.
Sheriff of Babylon.
I'm just kidding. I don't know if that actually fits. I haven't read that one yet. You also issues 1 through 3 of Strange Adventures. My actual one is I was trying to think of what fits into whatever genre this would technically be, but isn't necessarily a Superman story because we've All-Star Superman, 4-season Superman, yada yada. We all get that. But weirdly enough, I think I've recommended this on Earmint once before, but I don't know the number, but the last issue of Chip Zdarsky's Spectacular Spider-Man run is just like a one issue thing. It doesn't have really much to do with anything else in his entire run, but it's just like a little love letter to Spider-Man, but like in this exact kind of almost like self-aware kind of way. It's like someone's interviewing people for a documentary on Spider-Man. He happens to run into Peter Parker, and it's just a lot of people talking about how much they love Spider-Man. And then like Peter Parker kind of ends it like doing his own interview, like, oh, this is weird. It's really good. And it has that same kind of like, I'm Spider-Man kind of ending thing. So I recommend that.
I like what you said, it being a love story, because that is exactly what this feels like. And not being a Superman fan. I mean, I know enough about Superman from TV and movies and stuff, even if I haven't read. I've read comics with him in it, but I've not read a Superman comic, I don't think, until this one. But it did feel like a love story. Pardon?
I was asking Katan what they think.
He recommends Katan. No. What do you recommend, buddy? Put me the heck down is what he recommends.
Garfield.
I mean, honestly, yeah, like not Garfield, but it almost gave me those vibes of those like of comics, like comics that you like serialized comics. Obviously longer than that, but even like Calvin and Hobbes or something, like, you know, it's like those shorter stories. I wish I had more like experience or had read more collections of like short stories that are comic books, because those exist out there. I mean, Batman Ego was kind of like that, where there was a bunch of those like mini stories. I feel like anything along that lines, because that's very much what this feels like. Otherwise, I think, yeah, you guys nailed it. I mean, The Martian, again, not really, but like for the emotional journey of humanity. And then Doctor Who, someone said, it definitely felt like a Doctor Who episode. Like, I think especially that one where, I don't know, there's one where they're like, are they, what one are they dreaming in? What, like, what one's the reality? So are they on the TARDIS freezing to death, or are they on Earth and is Amy pregnant? And it's like, it's a pivotal moment if you know Doctor Who and the 11th Doctor, where Amy basically chooses between Rory and Doctor. And she chooses Rory, but no, like that's the kind of vibe I'm getting from it for sure. Did anybody read it? Katan is huge. Yes, he is, Eamon. He is going to the vet next weekend, like Saturday, but next Saturday. I'm going to see if the vet thinks he's too big, but he's not really chunky. He's just a big boy, but I'm nervous. I don't want to keep saying that if he actually is like overweight. So we're going to go check.
You have to imagine how surprised the vet is. He put Katan on the table and the vet, oh, geez. He's like, you probably got to fix him.
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, he's like, when I hold him up, he's my entire torso to top of head. Like, he's not a cat. Like, he's a freaking cat. Like, he's a bobcat. But he might also be chunky. Anyways, so next week we are going to be joined by my friend and the love of my life, Missy. We're going to be talking about Attack on Titan. So it'll be another manga stream. So I do hope you guys join us. It's a little bit different than comic books. You can see Mandy's face. She's not the biggest fan. But we're going to talk about Attack on Titan, which I think everybody should know the name at least. It's not an, I like anime, it's not an anime I ever personally got into, so I'm actually really excited to try to read the manga. It's one of Missy's favorites. It's obviously a very popular manga. That's why it was made into a show, and that's why it was Americanized. So we really encourage you guys to read that and come join us. We do have some awesome friends at Kodansha, who is the publisher. So we actually have some codes. Tommy, did we include some in today's newsletter?
No, because I was afraid that somehow someone could claim a code 1,000 times or something. So I didn't do it.
Okay, well, if you'd like to code.
Let's drop two in the chat.
Oh, Tommy's dropping some codes in the chat. Otherwise, if you try to claim one and it's claimed, or if you need help, shoot us a message and we'll do our best to help. We have quite a few of them, and we'll probably try to give some away before next week's stream. And you just claim them through Comixology. So you just need either an Amazon account or a Comixology account, which is free to get. And then you can read issue one or volume one for free. So that's kind of nice. If you'd like to join us. And I guess that's it. Should we give a special shout out to our crossover sponsor? So we're doing this cool thing this week that part or all of our audio is going to be used by a podcast. And the podcast is called The Comic Source. So if you're listening to us through that, very nice to meet you guys. We are over on nearmintnews.com. I should know our own website, shouldn't I?
Yes.
Or you can find us Near Mint Weekly at Instagram or Twitter. And if you find us somewhere else, you'll be able to find our YouTube, or you can search it on the YouTube page there. And that's where we do our live streams every Wednesday, most of the time. And we do a book every week. So we'd love to see you guys there as well. If you're joining us later, please try to comment and we will do our best to read the comments back later, or join us next time you're able to. Anyone else have anything to say?
Send us off, Mandy.
Oh, shoot, I had one.
Come on, Mandy, right now. Go.
No, not right now.
Mandy, hurry, go. God. Give us a stand up. Here we go. Mandy's in his with a big one.
Oh, I have.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.